Yes, I would like to thank everybody on this Friday afternoon to be here still. I would like to intervene about environmental aesthetics and the Anthropocene. My main point, I will make the point already, is to say that we don't take into account enough how much aesthetics counts in our choice regarding nature, but not only regarding the images of nature, but also regarding how much we filter all kinds of species and spaces in our daily environments. So one thing I would like to say is I would like to wonder about what environmental humanities have to say regarding the emergence of Anthropocene. How environmental aesthetics can find the proper terms to talk about such a catastrophe. First, that is to say that now aesthetics is part of the interrogation, mainly because many artists do intervene on this issue of environmental catastrophe. First, let me tell you some words about the history of aesthetics when you compare it to Anthropocene history. First, they're born together. The discipline of aesthetics was born in the 18th century, such as the Anthropocene. So the Anthropocene is supposed to be born between 1750 and when the Industrial Revolution had barely begun, but by 1850 it had almost completely transformed England and had spread to many other countries. When was aesthetics born? For many people here who do not know about the story of aesthetics or the history of aesthetics, the disciplines in itself was consecrated by the work of Alexander Gottlieb Baumgarten, and you find the dates here, which gave it its name. And Kant, later on, gave it its full theoretical depth with the critic of judgment. It doesn't mean that aesthetic has not been part of the reflection of philosophers since the antique world, since Plato and Aristotle. But it is to mean that it is to say that before Baumgarten and before Kant, the aesthetic was not considered as a discipline in itself. So what do Baumgarten say about aesthetics? So he begins to define what aesthetics is according to him. The issue for him and other thinkers of the time was to make aesthetics a scientific discipline equal to other disciplines. So this is exactly the contrary of what the precedent speakers have been talking about. I mean, people who just were interested in aesthetics, were interested in aesthetic as a science, not as something which would be apart from science. You know, it was as well a science as other kind of reflection of the time. And this is very important for my talk. It is to say that the way we shape our world and environment is as well a tool and a discipline to understand, to act upon our world. So for Baumgarten, aesthetics is a philosophy of sensible cognition which can link art, beauty, and human sensibility in a project of knowledge. The question and the issue is to know, is the question of knowledge, which would be very difficult considering the characteristic of aesthetic, which is naturally obscure and risk escaping rationality. So before Baumgarten, aesthetics meant sensation, aesthesis in Greek, and since Baumgarten, the meaning has shifted to sensibility or sensitivity, usually to describe an artistic experience. You find the cover of the book here. So, and for him, for Baumgarten, and many others who will follow, the aesthetics is... Oh, yeah. I'm very sorry. I do that here, and I forgot you. Well, you can help me, too.
Yes, I get it. So, okay. But then you need to tell me, click.
You have to tell me something, otherwise I
won't
be able.
Yes, I just realized when you talked about the cover. You
know. Okay. No, well, I'm not used to do two things in the same time. This is the, so you can find the definition by Baumgarten of aesthetics, and I will go further. So the difference between aesthesis. No, it is too much. So, okay. Click. Okay. So the idea from Baumgarten was what he called an aesthetic art of experience. So for Baumgarten, as others he cites in his work, the idea of this aesthetics at this time was to construct, to build up a discipline of experiments of the senses. So the idea was to determine a few general laws of pure sensual experience. And based on this, he says, the senses should be amplified and expanded by the aid of instruments and weapons of the senses, as he calls it, such as a telescope and other tools. So you see, aesthetic is not just a romantic dream we have been talking about. Discipline is also a scientific discipline equal to other science. And you could even say that if you talk about Anthropocene as the building up of one way to shape our world through scientific means, aesthetic is part of it. I mean, aesthetic participate to the idea that we have to build our world and shape it somehow. So this is very important, so not to make art and artistic work as something you can shift, and as something which would be, you know, separate and more noble because it is far away from the Cartesian issues. It is not like that, and I think we should be careful in terms of history of science as well as of history of art. Aesthetic has been reinforced later on by the critique of judgment. You can go further, and this is a classification we won't discuss of that. And the next one. So the critique of judgment was the third and last of concrete critics, the other two being the critique of pure reason, which deals with metaphysics and epistemology, and the other one being the critique of practical reason in 1788. So next one. So in his work, in this last critique and third critique, Kant introduces a subjective approach to aesthetic satisfaction. He says, more or less, that the beauty is not in the object, but in the eye of the one who looks at the object. So he thinks of aesthetics as a free play of the human faculties. And he will analyze all kinds of aesthetic from this subjective point of view. Is the one also, it is why it is so important for us who work in the environmental aesthetics field, that will propose a new look at nature. And he will theorize his aesthetics from this look on nature and not about art so much. So he will be developing all this kind of reflection of aesthetic of nature. For him, aesthetic is a type of judgment, a judgment of taste. It is not a domain of objects, as I told you. It is also a specific idea of thought. And the shapes, the forms, otherwise, are the ways that the mind is able to subsume the particular what we call, when you talk of colors, when you talk of everything which is called aesthetics, now you say, well, it is subjective. You seem to excuse yourself of having such a judgment. It is subjective, it is my opinion, because the beauty is not in this object I see. I know it is just in my eye. So for him, for Kant, the shapes are the way that the mind is able to subsume the particular under the general, meaning it is a way to construct what we see in something with what we can communicate. We say this object has such a shape, this is why I find it nice and nicely constructed, and you can talk like that of this object to someone else. It is how it becomes a judgment with you can communicate. So next one. So I will not ponder about this slide too much, but for Kant, aesthetics is very important because it is the way that humanity will be able in the future to educate himself, to have a better taste about what he builds around him. So this is where I go, and I think we should go back to this lecture because it is a very interesting lecture, because nowadays we going far, it is at least said so, that we're going far from nature and we have to educate ourselves in building up our environment, in shaping them. And it's something that Kant already said 200 years ago. I have trouble. So in this book, always, he says, after a few sentences indicated that the people governed by the law had to learn the art of reciprocal communication of ideas involving the judgment of taste, Kant insists that future time, moving away from nature, requires in this sense that people of that time learn to assess their work in bringing together the law directed constraint belonging to the highest culture with the force and the truth of a free nature, sensible of its proper worth. It is very important because he thinks that through the aesthetic judgment, we learn more about the world around us, but within us too. So we have this constant movement. Okay. And for him also, always in the third critique, you find a definition of imagination as a powerful agent for creating. For him, imagination is a second nature. This is the nature of man. It is where he invents himself, like nature invents itself. So you have this, you know, movement between the two natures, nature of man and the nature outside man. Okay, this reflection have been much worked after by, for example, Emily Brady, who is a main academic of environmental aesthetics. She's English, and she has been working after Kant and doing many books about it, especially about the definition of Kant of sublime, because he has this kind of categorization of the different types of beauty we find in nature, and sublime is one of these categories.
You can go further.
So what do we have to keep in mind of this brief summary of what was this history of the beginning of the discipline of aesthetics? What do we have to keep in mind? If I go to other philosophers, such as Rancière, who is well known amongst the aestheticians, Rancière distinguishes two moments in the regime of aesthetic. The first moment where was the moment where artistic works were supposed to educate morally. For Plato, art does not exist. There are only arts, in plural, ways of doing. Images are based on the imitation of a model. It's no imagination which plays a role. These imitation are differentiated by their origin, then by their destination. The idea, the images are there to educate people and citizens. So Rancière speaks of the ethical regime of image. So from the 18th century on, with the birth of the discipline of aesthetics, with the fine arts also becoming autonomous and not supposed to educate anymore, or less and less through the time, a conception of art was developed, saying its uniqueness. And aesthetics was described as an autonomous domain of knowledge. This evolution plays on the separation between ethics and aesthetics. I quote, you can go next one. And I quote Oscar Wilde, who says the first condition of creation is that the critic should be able to recognize that the sphere of art and the sphere of ethics are absolutely distinct and separate. And this will play a big role in the separation of arts from the general world, because you can't have an ethical, moral issue regarding art. This is the domain of pure expression. So what does change recently? I would say that environmental aesthetics and all art, eco-art, environmental art, say that this regime is shifting nowadays with the environmental issues. First, let's say that aesthetics was long limited to the arts and to the judgment of taste. It is exceptional because Kant was one of the rare who have this view of the aesthetics regarding nature before 1960s, in 1960s. And one paper which is always quoted is a paper by Ronald F. Byrne, which was published in 1966 and which is entitled Contemporary Aesthetics and the Neglect of Natural Beauty, saying that aesthetics has not been interested enough in the environmental issues and in the natural beauty. So since 1966, there are many thinkers today throughout the world that talks about environmental aesthetics, that talks about Anthropocene too, and try to refer to this tradition in aesthetical terms to see what kind of regime we are nowadays. What do we talk, I mean, if images are not supposed to educate anymore, if images are not separated from the world with their autonomy, but that we have to think nowadays of the role of aesthetics in shaping our world, could we talk about a formative regime? This is something I suggest. Rather to be mostly centered on art and on the analysis of the judgment of taste, aesthetic refers to a specific activity, which is of shaping our environment, built and natural, that it's not so much separate from other ordinary activities. Why it is not separate from other ordinary activities? Because when you talk of climate change, for example, you talk of the contribution of thousands and billions of people shaping their worlds even without thinking of it. So we all have a part in this shaping of the world somehow, and we all participate in shaping this earth. So I would say that nowadays occurs strictly an aesthetic activity and not merely an aesthetic, which would be dispassionated, disinterested, as would say Kant. And we have to think of aesthetic with a pragmatist view, much more than a metaphysical way. Okay, how long do I have?
10 more minutes, even
12. Okay, so I can go. And also, one thing I wanted to say about aesthetics, that the consecration of the autonomy of the artist has something to do with the modern subject of the aesthetics. So this idea of aesthetic is the idea of a modern subject which we can analyze how he feels the world, how he can create his own world, and we have this play with the subject and how he is constructed as an aesthetic subject. So this Baumgarten perspective regarding experimentation has been revived not only by contemporary trends in aesthetics such as neuroaesthetics. There is a big trend in neuroaesthetics you might know of, soma aesthetic or everyday aesthetics. We even talk in the following the work of Darwin of evolutionary aesthetics. This is a big trend, trying to see how aesthetics plays a role in terms of sexual reproduction throughout the age. But also there are new branches of philosophical world. So I would say, what are the issues regarding how we shape our world first of all? First of all, there are many books. You can go further. Okay, there are many books, some of them are quoted here, who are very critical of any aesthetical approach. They say, well, yes, that's true, we shape our cities, we shape our world, but every time it is to make more money. In fact, the way we shape our world and cities, it is to make some gigantic Disney world. And that we're going to sell our world, shaping it somehow. So I think that mainly when we think about aesthetics and the way we think of it, especially in the field of philosophy, it is mainly a critique, negative critique, I would say. And also, if you think of history of the contemporary critique of art, aesthetic has always been criticized also, the philosophy of aesthetic has always been criticized also, because for historian of art and critic of art, art doesn't need a discipline of taste, doesn't need a discipline of feeling, just to be avant-gardist somehow. So there is a critique. And this critique, I think, is an impeachment to really think what aesthetics does to our world and our way of shaping this world. For example, if you think of design, the 20th century has displayed the aestheticization of a set of objected devices associated with ordinary lives. For example, you can't find a house, whatever house, whatever computer, whatever tool we hold daily in our life, which has not been thought in aesthetical terms. I mean, it is just reshaping our niche, and it is so obvious when you look at it from a designer point of view. Or even when you look at this book, which is called La Terre Vue du Ciel, I think that everybody has heard of it. And this book shows how much we shape even our fields, our world, simply said. And this book shows that very, very with force, because it shows how graphic is our planet. It is a very graphic and aesthetic view of our planet. I would like to remind you that the word cosmetic, we were talking about cosmograph earlier on, is etymologically speaking linked to cosmos, cosmetic, what we put on our faces and this art of beautifying from the Greek word. So what do I think about aesthetics in the light of the Anthropocene? I think, first of all, that aesthetics do contribute to the control of the way we're going to shape our world, because it is part, it is part of an aesthetic control of our shaping of the world. I think the way we're going to have some aesthetic issues about the way we're going to build our bodies, our senses, even when you talk about prothèses, it's two sides of the same coin for me. Nature and body in terms of aesthetic control are two sides of the main coin. The challenge about that is to represent the condition of the creation of the collective unity of the manifold, the global imagination. So just as a reminder also, I would say that this link between shaping the destiny of humanity and shaping its aesthetic components is not new. You find that in the socialist imagination of the 19th century with the Fourier utopia, for example. So it is not a new link, but it is one we have to be reminded of, so to explore the continuity as well as the rupture. It is true also of certain romantic thinkers such as Schiller, who linked aesthetic view of the humanity and community education. Okay. So, one thing I would say that, first of all, when I was called to talk about this Anthropocene issue,
you have to, excuse me. Yeah, it's just this one, okay.
This one is an issue for me, because when I first was called to talk about Anthropocene, I thought, Anthropocene view is a global view, erasing all local complexities. And I think I don't want of that, because it reminds me of the fascination for images, and one of them is a fascination for the global images as a way to tackle with the fascination for global control we all have. So I was very reserved about talking of that. But in different contexts, both Rancière and Stengers, who are major thinkers, suggest that such making of worlds is bound up with practices in politics that may enable, disrupt, realign, or make strange our everyday material relation. So we have to think of a way to weave between local and global, linking communities. It is not just to weave images of local and images of global, but it is a way to link how do we make these different worlds at all scales, if I mean something by all scales. And we consider our practices of art and science that respond to climate change are situated in and emerge from this shifting material and political, natural, cultural relation. So a few images to conclude. To say that artists have been working on this issue since many years already. There is a big trend in eco-art, of environmental art. Artists going in the world, working with all this issue at a local level, trying to explore how new environment can be shaped and showed and criticized at a local level. One of these seminal work in artistic is the one I am going to show you. This work was one work from Hans Hacke, German artist. He collected the you see this pond, this aquarium, which is full of fish, and it was in a gallery. It was set up in a gallery, and there were two tubes going to the Rhine River, and so he wanted to show how the circulation of the water of the Rhine River in this aquarium, in the gallery, was going to kill the fish inside the aquarium. How polluted was this water? So you had to look at this sculpture, you can call that a sculpture, as a living sculpture or a dying sculpture. You had the choice. But I think this work is very interesting, even though it is a seminal work more than a contemporary work in art. Thank you.